Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, President George Bush has repeatedly referred to Islam as a religion of peace, and we've often followed up that statement asking the question, where is Islam a religion of peace? But if you recall the book Tea with Terrorists, there's now a sequel out from the same author, Craig Wynne, called Prophet of Doom, Islam's Terrorist Dogma in Muhammad's Own Words. And I would like to welcome Craig Wynne to Bob Enyart Live. Craig, thanks for being on the show.
Hello, Bob. Are you on a mission from God, as the intro says?
Well, sure. Sure am.
Good.
And we hope to identify the difference between truth and error, right and wrong, and then be on the side of truth.
That's a big task.
Yeah.
Truth is pretty unpopular in America these days.
I'd say so. So, Craig, we'd like to talk about your book, Prophet of Doom, and the subtitle, Islam's Terrorist Dogma in Muhammad's Own Words. You're saying that the blame for this kind of lawlessness goes back to Muhammad himself, and that's quite a claim. I tend to agree with you, but you're the authority on this subject, so I'd like to talk through it.
Sure. Yeah, I don't make the claim on my own initiative. I make the claim because that is the overwhelming evidence of the Islamic scriptures, both the Quran and the Hadith. 95% of the material in the Islamic Hadith is either disgustingly immoral or grotesquely violent. And the Quran's last 24 surahs, which are the only ones that count because of what's called abrogation, the Medina surahs are a declaration of war on all mankind. So the title of the book is just what the evidence produces as a verdict.
Okay, now, just to clarify a couple of the terms, you get your information out of the Quran primarily and the Hadith, a couple other sources, but explain the Hadith.
Sure. There are two sources of information on Muhammad, or on fundamental Islam and the creation of Islam. We all know the Quran, but most people have no idea that the Quran has absolutely no context. Imagine a book without context. I mean, it's almost ludicrous. And the Quran has no chronological ordering. It's literally jumbled together haphazardly. And because of that, the only way that the Quran can be understood is to put it in chronological order and to infuse it with the context of Muhammad's life. But the only place you can get that is from the Hadith. There are four sources of Hadith to tell us what Muhammad did and said. And these four sources that I'm going to list are the sole sources of information we have about this man. Mm. Not a word was written about Muhammad within 300 years of his death any secular historian. So,
other than the Quran and the Hadith.
Well, the Quran is not about Muhammad. Well, the Quran is allegedly Muhammad claiming that the angel Gabriel dictated these rhyming surahs to him.
Mm-hmm.
So the Quran is supposed to be, according to Muslims, only Allah speaking through Gabriel to Muhammad, and therefore it has nothing to do with Muhammad.
Now, the Quran is supposedly a recording of the verbal teachings of Muhammad that were recorded a couple generations after his death?
No. The Quran, according to Muslims, is Allah through the angel Gabriel dictating his final message to mankind. Therefore, the Quran, according to Muslims, is not Muhammad's message, but instead Allah's message.
Yeah, I understand that, but wasn't it that that message came through Muhammad? And then it was transferred verbally until it was recorded.
Yeah, the oldest Quran fragment that exists is dated to the early 8th century, which means all that exists between the time Muhammad allegedly said, here's what the angel Gabriel is telling me, and the time that we actually have a book written down, the Quran had to be maintained well over 100 years by hearsay, one person to another.
And let me compare that, Craig, real quick. Yeah. Compare that to the four Gospels of Jesus Christ. We have sources, for example, commentaries and letters, books written about the New Testament. For example, in 110 A.D., we have a letter that refers to the fourfold gospel of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So, and John, the Apostle John, died somewhere around 90 A.D. So within 20 years of his death, we know from historical references that the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were current and popular and could be referred to as a unit. So
right.
There was not 100 years before anything was written. These things were written pretty much contemporaneously.
Yeah, Mark was probably written 20 years after the resurrection. The last, which was the Gospel of John, was probably written 40 to 50 years. The Revelation to John, many think, were written in 90 A.D. I don't think that's the case. I think it's probably written in around 70 A.D. But the fact of the matter is that there are 25,000 letters, manuscripts, and fragments dating to within 200 years of the resurrection documenting the scriptures that we have that are part of the New Testament. The oldest Quran fragment dates to 100 years after Muhammad's death. And worse than that, the Quran itself is pure gibberish without what's called the Hadith collections. The oldest Hadith collection that purports to tell us anything about Muhammad's life and his formation of Islam was written by Ibn Ishaq 120 years after its death, but unfortunately that has been lost, and all we have is the edited version by a man named Hisham and another one by the name of Tabari, and those date 200 years after his death. But these four hadith collections, one is by Ibn Ishaq, one is by Tabari, one by Bukhari, and the other by Muslim, are the sole source of information about Muhammad, and the Quran is the sole source of information about what Muhammad says the angel Gabriel revealed to him.
Right.
And if you put those four sources together, which is what I did for Prophet of Doom, I used the hadith to order the Quran chronologically and to provide context for it and to put all of these revelations in the context of Muhammad's life. And when you do that, what you find is, A, Muhammad was a terrorist. He led 75 terrorist raids, according to their scriptures. B, he was a sexual pervert. He was a pedophile. He was involved in incest. He was a multiple rapist. C, he was a mass murderer. He killed a higher percentage of Jews within his reach than did Adolf Hitler. The man was a bloodthirsty assassin who decapitated anyone who spoke out against him. The poets of the day, was an illiterate society, were the journalists, and if anyone said that being a pirate and terrorist is incompatible with claiming to be a prophet, Muhammad had them killed. So what you find is that Muhammad claimed to be demon-possessed the first time he alleges that Gabriel gave him the surah. The first surah was actually the 96th surah, to show you how jumbled this whole mess is.
And it was his mother who explained, no, it's not a demon?
Yeah, Muhammad? Actually, Muhammad didn't know his mother. His mother died when he was very young, probably in the range of 2 years old, and his mother even gave him up to be reared by a Bedouin, which is it's pretty evident that he was actually molested when he was out in the desert. It was his wife, Khadija, being a molested boy who never knew his mother, Muhammad married money. He married his employer, and he married a woman who was old enough to be his mother. Her name was Khadija. And so after Muhammad has his first revelation, which is utter gibberish, and you'll find it in the first six verses of the 96th surah, Muhammad says that he was wrestled to the ground by this demon and pressed and tormented to the point of death. He was so frightened by the experience that he tried to commit suicide. And then he ran to his wife, employer, mother figure, if you will, and said, "Something terrible has happened to me. I fear for my life. I have been possessed." And indeed he was possessed. All through his life, everything that he would say and do is directly attributable to what would be said and done by a human being that is possessed by one of the devil's demons. Even in his last sermon in Medina, Muhammad admitted that a devil had been permanently attached to him. So it was Khajiit, though. Your information is correct here. It was Khajiit who convinced Muhammad that, no, you haven't been demon-possessed. What we got here is an opportunity for you to claim that you are the messenger of Allah and therefore lay claim to the only money-making enterprise in the little town of Mecca, which I call the Kaaba Inc. It was a pagan religious scam that Muhammad's great-great-grandfather had created, and Muhammad, in essence, just laid claim to that religious scam and the money and power that were related to it.
Could we, Craig, could we do this? Let me mention three things that I think I know about Muhammad and Islam.
Okay.
And you could tell me if these are accurate or not.
Okay.
Because I'm not by any stretch an expert. Years ago, I picked up a Penguin Edition English translation of the Quran.
Uh-huh.
Could make hardly heads or tails out of it.
Yeah, we'll talk about that and why that's the case in a moment.
But I do remember the last chapter as they were ordered, the Sarahs they are, as they were ordered by the Penguin publishers.
Right, it's an ode to Satan.
Well, as they ordered it, it was an episode about Muhammad and his Coptic slave girl. And that a young woman in his household, and he was interested in her, and Muhammad's wife, or his primary wife, was angry at Muhammad for looking at this young girl, and Muhammad gave her his word, a pledge, that he would not touch that girl. But then he went on, apparently, to have relations with this young female slave, and Muhammad's primary wife, and I think it implies others, were angry with him. And he told them that they would be cursed, that Muhammad deserves that which Muhammad takes, and if they were to complain, they would end up going to hellfire.
Well, there's a whole lot of both truth and inaccuracy in that summary.
All right.
Okay. First, the last chapter, the last surah of the Quran, as they are actually ordered, the 114th, along with the 113th, are both odes to Satan. They are wholly satanic. They're really interesting in that they are literally this prayer to Satan, using all the terms that are used of Satan in the Bible. As a matter of fact, that the word Allah, if you go to the five Hebrew words that are most similar to it, are all references directly to Satan. In fact, Satan's real name is Hallel, and the spelling is the same spelling as Allah, just the H is in a different place. The story that you talk about, yes, Muhammad did have a Coptic slave girl. He had many, many slave girls whose sole purpose was to satiate his lust. Muhammad had probably as many as 20 wives, but that does not count the concubines that he had, many of whom he raped immediately after conquering a group of people. He would send out his militants, particularly to Jewish towns, but also to Arabian towns. And they would terrorize them, and after the terror, they would murder the men, they would enslave the children, and then they would play a game of lots to determine who got to rape which woman. And Muhammad always got first pick. And so many of his concubines, many of his sex slaves, were Jewish women. The Copt case was just one of many gifts that was given to Muhammad, another child. His primary wife during this time, primary only in the one that he had had the longest relationships with, was Aisha. She was 6 when Muhammad married her. He was 50 at the time. And so that is classic pedophilia. There are two surahs that speak specifically to Muhammad's sexual indulgences, saying that all of the women of the world are rightly Muhammad's, for him to do anything that he wishes to, and that the Muslims have no claim on anyone, and Muhammad has all claims on everyone, and that he should never deny himself anything. The Quran's longest-winded immoral rant has to do with Muhammad indulging in incest, and the local community in Medina speaking out against him and saying, how can you be a man of God and be engaged in incest? Muhammad coveted his son's wife, and so he took her. And so the better part of a surah is dedicated to justifying incest.
And to compare what you just presented with the Judeo-scripture Christian teachings and in the Bible, in the Mosaic Law, God says, of course, incest is prohibited, and you cannot take those close relations and in-laws. You can't do that.
Well, of course, Muhammad took the Ten and went to war against the Ten Commandments. Mm.
And also, Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines, but the Bible utterly condemns him for that.
And look what happened to Israel as a relate of,
right.
As it relates to Solomon's
exactly.
horrible life.
Exactly.
Israel was split in two. She never recovered from Solomon's indulgences. And if you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you can read how Solomon just said, you know, I was terribly wrong. I have wasted have wasted my life. And so Yahweh, the God of the Bible, chose to tell his story through this nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. And he explains that, yes, men do bad things, and when they do bad things, there are consequences. In fact,
right.
the whole Old Testament is really revolves around two words. One is azab. Azab means to forsake, the choice of choosing not to form a relationship with Yahweh, and berith. Berith is choosing the covenant or choosing a relationship. And what Yahweh says is that if you choose azab, if you choose to forsake me, I will forsake you. If you choose to berith me, to form a loving relationship with me, I will reward you.
I will bless
with
you.
With a loving relationship. And Islam is the antithesis of Yahweh's teachings. That's why when Muhammad said repeatedly that the Quran confirms the Torah and the Gospels, it was one of a thousand utterly preposterous lies. They are in total conflict on every page. When the President of the United States says that the God of the Quran and the God of the Bible are the same God, then that means that he thinks the God of the Bible is Satan.
That's a truly despicable statement that George Bush has made. Now, Craig Wynn, author of Prophet of Doom, so I could take it at a high level, a big difference between the Bible and the Quran is that in the Bible, when its players, its prophets, kings, and apostles, when they do wrong, they're condemned for what they're for their wrong deeds.
That is correct.
For their incest, adultery, murder. In the Quran, it's a whitewash. In the Hadith, it's a whitewash of any lust, any perversion, any murder that Muhammad accomplishes. Islam covers it up, whitewashes it, tries to put a good face on it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a little too kind. The entire purpose of the Quran, when you order it chronologically and put it in the context of Muhammad's life, is to enable and to justify Muhammad's lust for sex, power, and money. So rather than just whitewashing it, it is a complete endorsement of all the most evil behaviors known to man, killing, torture, rape, incest, pedophilia, thievery. In fact, there's a Quran surah that says that stealing is lawful and good. Allah, as he is depicted in the Quran, is identical to the presentation of the devil in the Bible.
Well, let me ask you this then, my second question. It seems to me that in Muhammad's life, at least this is what I've gleaned over the years, that there were a couple different periods, and in one period he was more content, and in another, most of his life, he was more on the warpath. And so the handful of passages from the Quran that are quoted by its defenders come from a different period in Muhammad's life where he was more inclined to talk about peace. But they ignore the teachings to kill those who disagree with Islam.
Well, you're partly true. There are two distinct periods of the Quran. There's the pre-Islamic era, which are the Meccan revelations. There are 90 of those. And then there are the Islamic era revelations, which are the Medina period. It is true that whatever is even remotely close to being peaceful in the Quran comes from the first 90 or the Meccan surahs, and there is no hint of peace in the last 24 surahs, which are the Medinan surahs. However, you can't even say tolerance and peace because it really doesn't exist anywhere in the Quran. But the lack of a war manifesto coming out of the first 90 surahs revealed, which are, by the way, not in the beginning of the book. Most of them are at the end of the book, is not a result of Muhammad being at peace. He was never at peace. If you read the eyewitness testimony that's in the Quran and the Hadith, Muhammad was always accused of being demon-possessed. He was always a very irascible, ugly human being, always a discontent and a malcontent. What happened is that following the satanic verses, Muhammad was driven out of Mecca as a laughingstock. And as a result of that, he formed a league called the Pledge of Aqaba with some pagan Arabs in what was principally a Jewish town called Yathrib. And in the Pledge of Aqaba, these Arabs agreed to wage war against all mankind on behalf of Muhammad. And once Muhammad had a group of people bearing arms that were willing to fight and kill for him, from that point on, the principal message of every one of the Quran surahs, starting with the second surah and running through the last one revealed, which was the fifth, are fight, kill, destroy, maim, torture, mutilate, kidnap, ransom, all things that would be considered grotesquely immoral and violent today, and that is the principal theme of all of those surahs. But more than just him claiming that God did an about-face and that Allah now wants men to wipe the non-Muslims off the face of the earth, to kill every last one of them, Muhammad actually demonstrated this behavior by his example, leading 75 terrorist raids and butchering thousands.
And again, and you're getting that information from the Hadith?
Well, there's only two sources. There's the Hadith and there's the Quran. Mm-hmm. If you take the Quran's Medina surahs, that is the principal theme of them. The principal theme of the Medina surahs is to fight and kill all non-Muslims.
Right.
And the principal stories of Muhammad's words and deeds in the Hadith of the Islamic era is all of terrorist raids and of slave trading and of bribing his militants. And when you detail 75 terrorist raids over 10 years, that becomes the crux of the biological or biographical hadith, and so they make up 90% of the message of Muhammad's formation of Islam during the Islamic era.
So that Saudi Arabia's Wahhabi extremist sect of jihad is actually of the different Islamic branches, that's actually the closest to Muhammad's original intent.
That's correct. It's therefore it's not extreme, it's fundamentalist. You know, a fundamentalist is anyone who tries to emulate the life of their founder and who applies his words and deeds directly to their lives, which is what the Quran orders Muslims to do. So Wahhabism is pure Islam. It is the Islam of Muhammad. It is a fundamentalist Islam. The simplest statement that I can make is it is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. All good Muslims are terrorists.
And the Muslims who are who oppose terrorism are helping it by furthering, by trying to put a nice face on Islam and the Quran.
Well, any Muslim who says that they are against terror falls into one of two camps. Either they are a hypocrite, and this is something that is presented over 100 times in the Quran's last 24 surahs. The Quran says over and over again that any Muslim who does not fight jihad in Allah's cause ceases to be a Muslim. They become a hypocrite. It then says that the good Muslims, the jihadists, are ordered to kill the peaceful Muslim hypocrites, and that Allah personally will attend to their torture in hell.
So in Baghdad, when we see Iraqis murdering Iraqis in these huge numbers, that shouldn't be a surprise to us.
No, in fact, if American politicians and our media had taken the time to read the Islamic Hadith and the Quran, they would understand that everything that we are seeing is exactly what one would expect based upon their scriptures. They are ordered to kill all peaceful Muslims, because they're hypocrites, because Allah says that he hates peaceful Muslims more than he hates Christians and Jews. When they behead, that's standard Quranic behavior. The Quran orders Muslims to mutilate and decapitate all non-Muslims.
It sort of reminds me a bit of a non sequitur, but of Mormonism that says no one's going to hell except for Mormons who leave the Mormon church.
That's right. In fact, what the Quran says is that that if any Muslim rejects his faith, this is in the fourth surah, if any Muslim rejects his faith, kill him.
Okay, let me ask you this.
That's a very tolerant religion, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It's peaceful religion,
yeah.
But where?
Yeah, well, that's when our president constantly tells us that Islam is a peaceful religion.
Yeah,
He has directly led to the deaths of 900 American boys for absolutely no benefit when he makes such a statement and then sends them into to Afghanistan.
Because
and
in reality, we should be in a war against Islam. And we should, as Ann Coulter said right after 9/11, we need to hunt down their leaders, kill them, and convert them to Christianity.
Well, no. First of all, you cannot convert anyone to Christianity. That is that is completely against the scriptures. What Yahweh wants is for us to expose the expose lies and condemn them, be intolerant of them, and for us to expose the truth. It is then for each individual to choose.
Of course, yeah.
No one gets converted to Christianity.
No, hey, Craig Wynn, let me just. Ann Coulter didn't mean that you can force anyone to be a Christian, but the point is that it's politically incorrect for a Christian America. Now we're pretty pagan compared to what we should be, but for Americans to say that we want to convert Arabs and Muslims to Christianity, that's politically incorrect today.
That is correct.
And in fact, it would be great for our national security if we could go to Islamic countries, go to Turkey, and work on converting people to our Judeo-Christian understanding of God and the truth.
Yes. Let me tell you, what we actually need to do is what Yahweh tells us to do. He has a lot to say about Islam throughout the Bible, particularly if you translate it directly from the Hebrew and the Greek, a lot to say. And he constantly reminds us of Satan's involvement in Islam.
Now, Islam didn't exist till centuries after the New Testament was closed.
The tribulation didn't exist when Yahweh told us about it either.
The
fact of the matter is that all things that he talks about in his book, about half of the book was prophetic when it was written.
Yeah, right.
And so Yahweh, being I am, therefore I
just so we're almost out of time, you and I would have a debate if you were going to say that the Bible specifically refers to Islam or Muhammad. I would disagree with that.
Well, it doesn't specifically refer to Muhammad. It uses when you translate and the original text from Hebrew and Greek, what you will find is that it is obviously speaking of Islam.
Well, could we do this, Craig?
And in a very negative way.
We have 20 seconds left. You know what I would love to do?
Sure.
To finish this in a second follow-up.
Okay.
If we could do that.
My pleasure.
Maybe by tomorrow so the audience will get it back-to-back. So let me put you on hold, and our producer will pick that up in just a moment, and we'll schedule that. We'll try to get you on for tomorrow's show. That would be great. In the meantime, hey, if you live in Colorado, remember Denver Bible Church this Sunday morning or Sunday night. If you live anywhere else around the country, well, tell people to tune in to Bob and Yurt Live on the web at kgov.com. And if you'd like, ask us for our catalog or go to our online store and join us in the fight. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.